Ever wonder what it would be like to change your sex? This week's guest will give you her first-hand experience doing so on Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, once again, those are my babies. As always, thanks for getting me started today. Mwah! That's from Daddy. Welcome to Frank Relationships, where we provide a candid, fresh, and frank look into relationships with goals of acceptance, respect, and flexibility. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. Once again, I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Gail. She's got her doctorate, and she's not afraid to use it. What's up, Dr. Gail?
Hey, Frank.
Many of us hold our sexuality dear. After all, we had it even before we had our name, and often cling to it and its associated roles to define us, determine our responses, and guide our choices. So what does one do when the genitals that he's born with don't feel natural? So unnatural that the decision is made to change them from those of a male to those of a female. Enter today's guest. Formerly a male that had no problem meeting women. He was even married, but that life just wasn't working for him. So he changed his genitalia. Now he is a she. And she's here to tell us all about the 12 years that followed her sex change. So if you're interested in learning about her surgery, the adjustments that have been necessary along the way, and the advice that she has for anyone contemplating a similar surgery, then join me for the next hour as we talk with music producer and video engineer, who also happens to be a transsexual, Remy. Welcome to the show, Remy.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Frank.
You bet. Many of us wonder what it would be like to have sex with each sexual organ.
You want to do it right here?
Well, I guess that's one way to answer the question. You're one of the few that can tell us. Spill the beans. What's it like?
Well, I was a heterosexual male most of my life. Mm-hmm. I had gay friends. I knew a lot of gay folks. I knew what they did. I knew what they were attracted to, and I knew that I liked girls. And I wasn't really sure why I felt this way. It was a conscious thing that I realized around the age of six. But I knew I looked like daddy and not like mommy. And I had something more to play with as a little boy that girls don't get to play with. I guess they have other things to play with. And I enjoyed my life as a heterosexual guy.
Mm-hmm. Until when?
I think that's a tough question to answer, because a lot of folks like myself, while we may have been gay in our former lives or straight in our former lives or bisexual in our former lives, the way it is now, I'm a little more fluid in where I go with my sexuality and who I share it with. It might be with a girl, it might be with a man, or maybe I should say it might be with a woman, because that's over 18. And I have no interest in any people that are really younger than myself. I happen to like people that are my age, and it's tough finding horny guys at 57 years of age these days. You know, they need to take little blue pills and stuff like that.
So you crossed over just in time.
I think so, yeah. I get to be one of those lucky old broads.
You don't have to use a pill.
Yeah, I won't have to say, like, hey, come on, Frank, take the pill.
So back to my question. What's it like having a vagina now once you when you're 12 years post having a penis?
Well, there's a lot of advantages to it. First off, I was an avid motorcyclist. I liked horse riding. And I always wondered why guys looked so serious when they were doing those particular activities. you find out the hard way, like the pothole hard way. And that's not a whole lot of fun. But then you go on and you have this change made, and you hit those potholes again, or you end up galloping, or maybe the horse is a little hot to trot. And you watch all the women. They smile. Now I know why.
Because there's nothing in the way.
Nothing in the way, and it's a lot of fun when you're sort of like, banging that little thing away indirectly sometimes. And it also really helps when you get arrested, especially if you like girls, because that way I get to go to jail with not those big, fat, sweaty men's like yourself, Frank, but I get to go down to jail with people that's as gorgeous looking as Dr. Gale. And then I can even get her to give me, like, maybe an OBGYN examination there in the jail. Yeah.
Okay.
So now, Remy, can you tell us about, we didn't really get the answer to the physical aspect of...
Oh, well, being on the receiving end. I must say that was a really fabulous and interesting experience, never having been on the receiving end of anything other than somebody else's wrath. Which was happened quite a bit in my life, but as a woman, when you spend this much money for a phony man-made vagina, you want to take it out at least for a couple of test drives, and it was very interesting being on the receiving end. It was rather pleasant. It did not remind me of the type of experience or sensations that I had when it was the way I was originally delivered. And
so psychologically, how is that? How many years were you a man?
I was male. I presented as a man for 30 years.
Okay.
I came out in 1986, April 10th, 1986, just before United States Ronnie Reagan presidential press conference.
And when you say you came out, do you mean you came out as a...
I finally made the outward blurt that I always thought that I should have been a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 5 years into my relationship, 1 year into my marriage. And it was something that I lived with in denial.
So how does that feel on the inside? Like, living your life thinking that, I was born the wrong gender. How does that feel?
It is a life of emotional torment and the worst confusion one could ever want to wish on somebody you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that the only way I was going to be able to have female parts was on that of another person. And so I really did enjoy dating women.
Did you, when you went to the bathroom, did you hate your genitalia? Was it like, man, what did God do to me, or whoever you believe? Like, what, did
yes.
you hate your parents?
Yes,
what,
there was, what was there was that definitely like? That aspect of, how could a mistake like this have been made?
Mm-hmm.
What did I do to deserve this kind of misery mm-hmm. and confusion? I was a really smart kid, and I knew that kids went through growing phases of sorts, and I thought that perhaps what I was experiencing was some kind of a childhood growing phase.
Right, so you kind of tucked it away, this will go away type thing.
Yeah, exactly. I always had the thought that at some point in time, as I would mature and become of age, mm-hmm. that the right woman that fell into my life would change the way I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is what we're taught often happens.
Yeah, right. Yes, yes. Yeah. And to a certain extent, it did. I mean, I found the woman of my dreams, or rather, the woman of my dreams found me.
And how was that? Did she change your life? Did she make you feel like, wow, those feelings were false?
Yeah, well, I was hoping that's what would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't. I enjoyed being her husband and her boyfriend. When you're walking around New York City and somebody snatches your wife's purse and takes off down the road, I was right on his heels and took him down to the ground and smacked him around, took back the purse.
Mm-hmm. So you did all the manly, masculine things that...
I was a macho guy.
Okay.
All of my life. I was a babe magnet. I was a rock and roll disc jockey on the number one rock and roll station in Baltimore back in 1976.
Okay.
So I was really a macho guy. And I've always thought that maybe God, I'm not a religious person, but should there be a God or a greater entity above, that I was perhaps made a boy instead of being a girl, because boys just didn't seem to behave themselves very well, and I thought maybe I was supposed to just set a better example for them.
Mm-hmm. You said your wife, you came out after being married for a year.
Yeah, she wasn't happy about that. In fact, this was a very difficult part of my marriage, and what basically finally culminated in a divorce 7 years later.
So how do you sit your wife down? What is that conversation like?
The conversation was during a nervous breakdown that I was having, so it was not necessarily something we were sitting to talk about in particular. I was going off about other problems that had happened earlier in the day and how upset I was about it. And at some point at the mental health facility of Fairfax Inova Hospital Center, I just blurted it out. So it was not a kind way of presenting it to her.
So this was causing significant distress in your life?
Forever. Mm-hmm. Forever and ever. And even now, now that I am, so to speak, the woman of my dreams, it's still something that I have trouble personally accepting because of my intellectual and intelligent background and my experiences as an engineer, where you don't fix something that ain't broke. But I had to actually go over that problem in my head many, many times over while I was fixing broken equipment and troubleshooting broken equipment, which I was very good at, only to wonder why I couldn't troubleshoot and fix me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, you're whole, your body is whole, you seem to be a whole person, and so nothing is broken other than your thought process.
Well, it sounds like, so you stated that you guys remained married for 7 years.
Yes.
So it sounds like, or I don't know, maybe I'm overgeneralizing, but it sounds like maybe you guys tried to fix it within those 7 years, or what happened in those 7 years?
We talked about things together, and my ex-wife was an up-and-coming opera star around the world, and I would go to her performances and her debuts and her recitals, and when I did go, even after I came out, I decided that, well, you know, you are her husband, and this is how you should present yourself to others. I am not there to try to inform the world that I happen to think that I should have been a girl. It's not about me, it's about her. And I find so many people like myself in my community that are transgendered do seem to exhibit an awful lot of narcissism and selfishness, where they have to shove this in a lot of people's faces, and they are not willing to be malleable in their respect of other people's feelings or perceptions of perhaps what could be difficult or uncomfortable situations, depending on a certain event that has occurred.
Well, let me stop you. How I was thinking that it sounded like you were feeling guilty, but you say narcissistic. How do you equate that?
I felt guilty because my wife was very hurt.
Mm-hmm.
She was hurt that I did not share these feelings that I was having with her,
and probably angry.
She was very angry, mm-hmm. very angry, very hurt.
Right.
She had also told me earlier on in our relationship that she also fancied herself to be, well, bisexual.
Hmm.
I don't think that she ever necessarily had any real relationships with any other females. I'm not certain that she didn't. When we were talking together, I had brought this up because she had mentioned it earlier on in our relationship. And I said, but you said you also liked girls. She says, yeah, but I'm not attracted to you as a girl.
That's odd.
And
right?
I was like, well, I was like, she knew me as that handsome, hunky guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if I show you my picture from my NBC vacation relief identification, you're going to see a pretty handsome guy, and I think your engineer's looking pretty funny in comparison to me.
So what do you perceive now that you're a woman, okay, you guys were married for 7 years after you came out to her.
Yeah.
What happened within those 7 years? Did you have children? Did you go back and forth between thinking about having a sex change? Did you talk about, okay, well, honey, if I have this gender regenerification change, what's going to happen then? Are we going to remain together?
You bring up a very important subject in this matter, especially with some people like myself that do come out in the middle of a marriage,
mm-hmm.
and then what happens to that marriage and that relationship between those two people?
Mm-hmm.
This is such a emotionally distressful way to live that once you've, in a sense, or so to speak, come out and declared who you feel yourself to be and what actions you're going to take to now transition and make a change into the into presenting as the sex that you believe you should have been in a marriage. You know, you have to work at marriages, and compromises and concessions must be made between each one of the parties on occasion. And I indicated to my wife that while I might dress and look and present in a peculiar fashion on my own, that most definitely anything that we would do together, if she would prefer, I will present myself as her husband and dress as such. This was not something that the psychologists and psychiatrists told me was either easy to do, was not necessarily recommended to do, and they really didn't know anyone in my situation that could do things like flip-flop successfully in their presentation.
Right, so of course I was going to ask you, did you see a therapist? I'm certain that you did, as you stated. So what were their recommendations for you?
I think they kind of still were breaking new ground with this back in 1986 when I first came out.
Because you went to the clinic at Johns Hopkins, right?
No, that was the fascinating thing. Being a recording engineer, I had recorded a job in Montreal, Canada back in 1978 that was called the International Congress of Sexology. And this was a medical convention with all of the people involved with any kind of gender issues whatsoever, and many famous folks that wrote books like Dr. David Rubin,
mm-hmm.
who wrote the book Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex. Kinsey and Pomeroy were there, or I guess Pomeroy was. I guess Kinsey was dead by that time, although I don't remember right off. Dr. John Money from Hopkins, who had started the gender clinic at Hopkins, was there, along with many other highly esteemed medical professionals. Mm-hmm. And I heard about myself as I recorded these lectures, and I was like, oh, God, you know, I'm not the only one. Because
so
for
before
many years,
then, you thought it was just you.
I thought it was just me.
Something
I mean, I knew
must
about
be wrong with me.
Yeah, I knew about gay people, and they didn't want to be girls. They seemed to be happy just the way that they were, except that they were attracted to same-sex people.
And you remain attracted to women.
For the most part, yeah. Now, I'm not sure now, as I think back on my life, was I attracted to the women because I found them attractive and sexually alluring?
Mm-hmm.
Or was I attracted to them because I just wanted to be them?
Hmm.
And that I felt at times guilty or ashamed of, because while I enjoyed making love with them, they never really realized that, vicariously speaking,
you were kind of living through them.
I was them, and they were a handsome Remy David doing me.
That's so interesting to me, that you were with them because you wanted to, kind of like you were internalizing the relationship.
Yeah, but strangely enough,
and projecting yourself onto them a little bit.
I was a very monogamous person to begin with, and I really believed more in love and relationships than I just believed in wanting to get my rocks off with somebody, which was also easy for me to do, and I did on multiple occasions too. But
because you were so handsome.
Well, yeah, and I always felt, you know, when you were a rock and roll disc jockey at the local rock and roll station, and you're giving away free tickets to see Yes at the Meriwether Post Pavilion if you're color number 5, you get a lot of girlfriends real, real fast, even if they don't win the tickets.
Now, have you had sex as a woman? Have you had sex with a man, like a?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was something that I know a lot of the transsexuals like myself, once they've had the surgery, can hardly wait to go experience this new life that they were just given. And I really wasn't in a hurry to do that.
Were you nervous?
Yes, there is an element of nervousness that I had. I grew up in a rough neighborhood in Detroit, and I experienced firsthand violent discrimination only because I was a kid born of two Jewish parents and raised an atheist, and I got beat up by an awful lot of white Christian kids just because I guess their parents told them something about the Jews killing Jesus, and who knows why they did it.
Now, I interacted with someone that was born a male. Wait, he was born a woman and then changed to had the surgery to change to a male.
Are you screwing around with my boyfriend?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But you can have him back. Now,
I'll have to think about that one.
Okay. So now you guys would be our match made in heaven. But he told me that he experienced a lot of discrimination from the gay community.
Yes.
Now, when he was a woman and he, you know, was attracted to females and women, he, you know, he was accepted and he even went to a church and, you know, that was, you know, gay, lesbian.
And or hanging out at those lesbian nightclubs that
but
I enjoy.
But once he changed
out,
to a male, he got married to a woman, and it was very difficult. So the men that were born men, you know, he wasn't masculine enough for them. And then the, you know, his prior community, they really weren't accepting enough of him.
Yes.
So now, did you experience that? Have you experienced things similar to that?
No, I don't think I've gone through the same kind of an experience, only because I'm not out there to try and identify myself and necessarily even make any kind of extra effort to present myself as a woman to people. I'm not big on makeup, although I did put on a little bit today because I didn't know if we weren't rolling video cameras. So I didn't want to look like death warmed over.
Did you have breast implants done? So for him, he had his breasts removed and he, you know, he had facial hair and all of those
things.
That's
right. When you give women testosterone, you put them through a male puberty. And
he said that he feels like he's going through puberty. He said he's naturally, his age is like between late 30s, early 40s. But he said he feels like a 12-year-old man or boy going through puberty.
That's absolutely incorrect. If he's taking testosterone, he does not feel like a 12-year-old boy.
How does he feel?
Like an 18-year-old man.
Well, now, how did you feel when you initially changed? Did you feel like you were going, I guess it's different for us, but how did you feel when you initially had the surgery reassignment?
Well, before you have the surgery reassignment, when you have to work with at least one therapist, and you have to present to the surgeon at least two letters from two different therapists.
Stating what?
Stating that you have been living the life of the gender you feel that you are full-time for the past couple of years.
And did you begin living your gender while you were still married?
Yes, I did.
So that was difficult for you because, as you stated before, you were trying to do the double life thing with the wife to make her comfortable.
Yes, and making compromises with her, there was a big discussion and an issue of me doing female hormones.
Mm-hmm.
I told her that if that upset her, then I would not do the female hormones. that I would just go ahead and start living my life the way that I felt that I should have been. And instead of the female hormones, I was put on another hormone known as progesterone, which women also produce, particularly in high abundance when they're pregnant. Many women enjoy being pregnant because of the increase in progesterone in their endocrine system throughout their body.
So what did that do for you?
This was also at the time, back in 1986, being administered to sex offenders, and they referred to it as chemical castration, and it was supposed to take away your aggressive drive towards your aggressive sex drive.
So did it suppress your testosterone then?
It's supposed to aid in suppressing your testosterone. It's supposed to aid in knocking down your sex drive, where you have to have it, and anybody that's near you, well, too bad for them. You're getting what you want.
So since you had that, did you, were you not attracted to your wife? Did you guys not interact?
Were you sexual? I loved my wife very, very much, and in my eyes, she was just a gorgeous, gorgeous woman. And we still continued to enjoy heterosexual sex together. I did not play the part of the woman while we were trying to make love. I used my equipment that I was born with.
So from a psychological standpoint, as you stated, your therapist felt like that wasn't as beneficial. So well, to me, it sounds like it could be kind of confusing for you.
Well, some of the therapists, I think, were rather confused by it because so many of their patients led a lifestyle that was of the homosexual variety.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those people, many of those guys who were living the gay lifestyle, and perhaps referred to themselves as the passive one or the bottom or however you want to put that, thought that perhaps they too should have been women. Two of these people that I knew were those particular sized men that are no larger than that of a woman, have a small bone structure, and when they convert and transition into being women, my goodness, you would never ever even guess that they started off male, and they went on to have their sex change surgery. And I remember one gal, her name was Jessica. We were talking one night, and she was rather upset. And I asked her what she was being upset about, and she told me, "Remy," she said, I know I've made a terrible mistake in my life." And I'm like, "Jessica, what kind of a mistake have you made?"
Mm-hmm.
She said, "I now realize that I was nothing more than a gay man."
Wow.
And I'm like, "Why do you say that?"
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Well, I like the company of gay men. I like being with gay men. And now that I'm a woman, there's no gay man that wants me. And all of these straight guys want me." And she goes, I really don't like them at all. I don't like their company. I don't like how they go about things. And
now, did you experience that? Like, wow, I've made this major, major life change, and then maybe it's a mistake. Did you experience those feelings?
No. From what I've done to myself, in no way do I consider what I've done a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to the issue of relationships, which is, of course, one of the reasons why we're talking, I have to say that my partner of 19 years was a lovely, lovely man. He is having his health problems so severely right now that he has told me he can no longer carry on a relationship with me after 19 years.
Hmm.
So we have parted company on a friendly and loving basis. However, he started off life as a girl.
Wow.
And when I first...
So y'all was referring to him earlier.
Yeah. No. So people have wondered, "Remy, are you gay? You've been with this guy, and he looks and sounds just as handsome as Frank."
Okay. So your partner was a woman initially.
That's right.
Born a woman, had the sex change, right? and then you guys met up.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I met him on two different occasions before we actually got together. The first time I saw him, he was still a she. She was still married, and she was about 2 weeks away from giving birth.
Wow.
The second time we bumped into each other was at one of my support groups. Mm-hmm. Here in the Washington, D.C. area, I'm one of the founders of a transgendered, transsexual support group that I gave the name of MAGIC to. And MAGIC is an acronym. It stands for the Metro Area Gender Identity Connection.
And do you guys still meet up currently?
I am no longer actively involved with the group.
Is it still
the group is still in existence. It has been now for the better part of 27 or more years.
So for the benefit of some of our listeners, could you tell us how they could contact the group, MAGIC?
I believe you can find a Yahoo group that is MAGIC DC. Mm-hmm. The MAGIC group meets the third Friday of every month at the Falls Church Presbyterian Church, which is a place that we've been meeting at now for, I guess, going on about 20 years.
And was that beneficial for you to have those support groups?
My primary shrink early on when I asked him, is there any kind of support groups for people like us, he hemmed and hawed a little bit and said, well, there are, but they're not necessarily recommended.
Now, you mentioned a shrink. Were you given a, back then I guess it was a DSM-3 maybe? Were you given a psychological diagnosis?
Well, being the smart ass that I am, Dr. Gale, and I'm quite the smart ass, I was also still an employee with NBC, and I did have a group health policy.
Okay.
Many group health medical policies indicate that they will not provide any services to those changing gender.
Okay. That's specifically listed.
It is specifically listed.
Okay.
And so...
So what did you do? Because you're intelligent.
Maybe I should... I might need something to drink soon, but aside from that... I'll try to go back to my female persona instead of my rock and roll persona.
Whatever works for you, Remy.
Sure. Deep Purple coming right up after this. The question again was how I dealt with the relationship. And it was hard for me not to want to take the actual estrogen female hormones, is that inspires things like breast growth,
mm-hmm.
and changing of the subcutaneous fat under your skin that makes women also curvy and round
soft.
And soft, all that kind of good stuff. What it doesn't do for the male to male to female transsexuals that people don't realize when you take female hormones is it never changes your voice.
So what do you do for that? Do you take voice lessons? Do you consciously work on that?
There are many, many folks that go to speech therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And there are those speech therapists out there to try to tell you how to speak like a woman better and how to go ahead and change your speech patterns. It's not so much that of pitch as it is that of delivery and certain kinds of enunciation.
And so then also, did you work on mannerisms and how to, quote unquote, be a woman?
Ma? Me? I would never do anything like that. I'm not that shallow, Dr. Gale. actually, yes, it's, when you're a very, I was a very masculine guy, and, I realized that there was just a different way you had to carry yourself, how you had to move, even picking up things, and how you move your fingers when you pick up something. Just like the, I think there was a Three Stooges thing when they were trying to refine the Three Stooges, and you had to keep your pinky out in order to look refined when you were holding your beverage in your hand.
Now, with regard to relationships, okay, you and your ex-wife, fast forward 7 years, you eventually divorced.
And I was not the one who wanted the divorce.
And so was that a part of your narcissism? Like, I must remain in this relationship to help her and still feed your own ego?
No, I did not feel that way about it. Okay. This was definitely based upon love and emotional support.
And did you all have children?
Strangely enough, we had one mistake once. And we were very, very career-oriented people. Now, I believe in a woman's right to decide what she wants her body to do. Mm-hmm. And it's nobody else's business. To me, that's a complete violation of the Constitution of the invasion of somebody's privacy. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do whether you're killing a baby that has not yet been born. Mm-hmm. It's something inside your body. And I told her, I said, if you are now, going to take this child to term, I will be the best daddy this child has ever had. Mm-hmm. And I think that perhaps I would have, I'm not sure that I would have changed the way that I was, because this actually occurred, I believe, after I came out.
So it sounds like she decided to terminate the pregnancy?
Yes.
Okay, and then you guys ended your relationship.
Our relationship did not end after
the termination
of the pregnancy. Okay. And the marriage went on for another few years after that. My wife was an up-and-coming opera singer, and she started making lots of money, and she no longer needed my help, my love, or my support.
Okay.
And that was really the end of it there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would have stayed married and completely faithful to her.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking with music producer and video engineer who also happens to be a transsexual, Remy. Please, tell us about that mean sound machine that you've parked outside ready to help someone become a star.
Well, I have a very interesting facility that I built when I was still working for NBC. I enjoy doing on-location recordings of great events. Great entertainment musical happenings, everything from bluegrass to opera, from gospel to heavy metal rock and roll, to jingles and commercials, and then doing the news. And the vehicle that I built is in a gigantic diesel truck of 25,000 pounds. It is a rolling control room on wheels. I call my company Crow Mobile, and Crow, like the bird, is an acronym standing for Control Room on Wheels, CROW.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular vehicle has done gigs that have garnered me Grammy, Emmy, and Soul Train Music Award nominations for superlative engineering work.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever want children?
I absolutely did want children. One thing that I was scared to death about.
What's that?
And that was, could my feelings or what I'm experiencing be genetic?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, would I be putting my child through the emotional torment that I had to live with?
Hmm.
And I didn't think I could be that kind of selfish and take that kind of risk with somebody else's life and well-being.
Now, you stated that your partner of several years has a Does he have one child, or?
He gave birth, she gave birth on December 22nd, 1981,
mm-hmm.
and that was a lovely baby girl.
Mm-hmm.
He raised along with his husband for about a year until they divorced their daughter, and my partner continued to raise, at that time, her daughter, as a normal kid. This daughter watched her mother transition to becoming a man.
Mm-hmm.
And
then once, did you ever help her co-parent her daughter?
I absolutely did. Her daughter referred to me as a PU.
What does that stand for?
Well, thankfully, I did take showers rather regularly, and that PU stood for parental unit.
Okay. So although you never had a biological child, it kind of sounds like you were afforded the opportunity to co-parent.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have mentored other youngsters in their teenage years. And what's nice about doing things like that is, unlike being a parent, at the end of the day, I get to hand them back.
Right. They get to go home.
Absolutely.
Along the way of all of this, you also had some brain issues. And I'm not just talking about the brain in your head thinking. I'm talking about a surgery. Tell us about that.
I have had some interesting medical problems in my life and throughout my life that have caused very peculiar perceptual distortions.
Like what? Can you explain it to us?
Oh, yeah. It was pretty cool. We've all seen Japanese movies that have been overdubbed into English, where whatever's moving on their mouth is certainly not the words that you're hearing being said. Or that wonderful sound when you are in a huge church and everybody is left and your friend is on one side and you're on the other and they're trying to talk to you and all you hear is this big bathtub of reverb and you can't understand a word of it, followed by a number of other interesting medical issues. And somewhere around 1991, I went blind. Woke up blind in one eye, and I couldn't figure what had happened. I let it ride for about a day, thinking it was just some kind of an odd thing. Maybe I slept on it funny.
And what did it turn out to be?
Didn't go away. Well, went to the doctors, and they did an MRI of my brain. It was early MRI technology in 1991, and they sat me down, and they said, "We're sorry to tell you this, but we believe you are experiencing a symptom of multiple sclerosis." And I said, "I have multiple sclerosis." They said, "Yes, we believe you do." And I asked them, "What's going to happen next?" They said, "Well, that's the problem with this degenerative nerve disease. We don't know." I joined the Multiple Sclerosis Society, and I have since learned that as my condition worsened to nearly total blindness and the inability to walk or hold my balance or control bodily functions such as bowels and bladder, that my life was pretty much over at that point. And a second MRI revealed that this was not necessarily just multiple sclerosis, but also I had a deathly serious condition that we know today as water on the brain, correctly referred to medically as hydrocephalus. Sometimes children are born with this malady,
right,
and they are little more than vegetables,
right,
and they will never be anything else other than vegetables, no matter what kind of therapies or medications are used upon them. And then this also happens to people that have been in severe accidents,
right,
of some sort, where people like Gabrielle Giffords that have been shot in the head, what have you.
So you didn't have a good prognosis.
I had a simply miserable prognosis from the surgeons who discussed it with my immediate family, not in front of me, that I did. I needed emergency brain surgery, and that even given the emergency brain surgery, there was not a good prognosis that I would survive it.
Speaking of your immediate family, did you ever discuss your feelings when you were a child or when you were older with your parents?
Never. I was afraid to death to say anything about it, because I found out that my feelings were something also that I found somebody else had. Now, this was a person who came out with a recording in 1968 by the name of Walter Carlos, which was a bunch of classical music Bach performances performed on this brand new fangled thing called a Moog synthesizer. And I was on an airplane trip to go visit my father after my folks divorced, and I'm reading the airline magazine about this woman by the name of Wendy Carlos that played with this Moog synthesizer, and I just assumed this must have been Walter's brother or Walter's sister or Walter's cousin or something like this. And throughout the article, it was talking about Wendy Carlos, and further down in the article, it said Wendy, and then there was a parenthesis bracket that said Walter, formerly Walter, and it went on to say stuff else about her work. And at 30,000 feet, at 15 years of age, I had quite a little bit of a, I guess, a 15-year-old nervous breakdown and perhaps an epiphany that made me realize that the way I felt was the way this person also felt, and she made this change, but I couldn't do anything like that. That's crazy.
Now, were you an only child, or are you an only
I have
child?
A younger brother, too.
And how was he receptive, or how has he been receptive to your change?
Well, I think he'll always see me as his older brother. And for most transsexuals, they like their family members to also refer to them in their newly chosen gender. And I can't do that to my family. I mean, they know who I am. They know who I was. Many transsexuals, if you ask them who they were before they made this incredible change in their lives, frequently I've heard comments such as, oh, that person is dead. And I always took quite an offense at that kind of a comment, although these people have no other way of working out why they feel this way in their head.
Have you done that? Like, have you merged your past life with your current life?
Absolutely. I have told people now, this is a problem here that you're encroaching, because when you're going through this therapy with more than one mental health professional, and it is mandatory that the letters come from at least a psychologist and or a psychiatrist, not just an MSLW, social worker.
MD.
And if I were to tell them what I'm going to tell you right now, they would have never given me my letter of approval for surgery. But to be honestly true with you, I feel that I'm just as much a man as I am a woman.
Explain that to us, please.
Well, having had this very macho male lifestyle in my background, and
for 30 years.
For 30 years, and being absolutely proud of that very handsome and entertaining guy, Remy David, that person ain't dead. That person's still alive. I'm still that person. And I don't feel like that was a different person. I don't feel like I'm a different person. And I'm one of those people who's also retained my original first name.
And that's odd, right? Because typically your name changes once you have the...
Well, yeah. I mean, Frank's case, if I had the name of Frank or Franklin and I wanted to become a woman, I think I would probably just have changed it to something a little more adaptable, such as Francis. I find it interesting that many of my transsexual sisters may have had the name of, like, Bobby or Robert, and I happen to know a gal by the name of Roberta, and sometimes they call her Bobby, and these friends of mine whose name was Robert, they want to be called Jessica.
Right, so now let's get back to relationships. So your partner of several years, you guys, or he has decided and determined that, you know, that relationship is no longer. So now, you know, how do you... you know, live the best optimal life from here on out?
How do I live the best optimal life? Well, I think it'll start by my next job offer, if there ever is another job offer. You know, the economy's not doing so well, and when you're 57 trying to reinvent yourself again, you're not really going to get a full-time job anywhere unless you're damned lucky. And being a transsexual... And I don't care what kind of laws are in place that have been passed recently that protect transsexuals in the workplace from any kind of discrimination from not being hired, it's going to go ahead and occur, because a lot of people like us are easily spotted, confuse other people. Other people take offense to people like myself, and no business wants to risk their business with somebody like that. People of color went through something similar to this not so terribly many years ago. The changes happened, but they were slow to come about. And today we have Barack Obama.
Do you ever regret having the surgery?
Absolutely not. No way. I'm very happy I had. Well, I guess I could say there's a certain regret that I have having had the surgery.
What's that?
I'm an avid camper.
Okay.
And when you're out there hiking and camping and stuff like that, and you have to stop and do a number one or something,
You have to pull your pants all the way down.
All the way down. And then God help you if you fall backwards and your tush ends up in a thistle full of poison ivy. You know, guys don't have to go through.
And you have to make sure you squat enough too, right?
You know what?
What are you asking for? You know the answer.
I actually have a wonderful little camping gizmo that I can still pee standing up if I want and not get it all over my feet.
Okay.
And that's pretty funny because it's not something that I really want to do anymore that way. I'm lazy. I like to sit down or lean myself up against the back of a tree and just go like, hey, I'm real comfortable now. Look, the tree is all wet.
I wonder, is that something only men who are now women would want to do? I can't imagine a woman who's never been a man even thinking about peeing standing up. Or does
she? Well, I mean, yeah, because it's convenient.
It's convenient.
You know what I mean?
It's a handy handle.
So why don't you have the gizmo that he has?
Well, his was man-made.
Was it? Well, did you make it?
So that I could pee standing up?
Uh-huh. Or did you buy it?
Actually, you can do it either way.
Okay. Well, see, where's your gizmo?
You want to save a few bucks? You go out and you buy yourself a pediatric liquid medication spoon. Has a little sort of cupped end to it and this nice long graduated area that the medication flow is in. And then you just lop off, or rather sort of give this little piece of plastic a circumcision. And if you know where to put it and where to hold it, you can pee standing up too.
See, Dr. Gale, don't say I never did anything for you.
Come on, Dr. Gale. Let's go to the ladies' room. I'll show you how to do it right now.
Okay.
Yeah, come on, Frank. Come on,
you great gizmo just for you. We know what you're getting for the holidays. How much was your surgery?
I was born Jewish, and some people have accused me of making this particular decision in this manner. I had my surgery back in, yesterday was my actual second birthday of my existence of 12 years as a woman.
And what do you mean by that?
I had my surgery on February 27th, 2001, and I believe today is the 28th.
It is.
Yeah, so, you know, I was out there partying last night, trying to get laid. Never happened. but I tried, you know, you got to try.
So it seems like that you eventually took the estrogen and all those things.
Yeah, once my marriage broke up, I went ahead and I went on the estrogen, and that's how I got my breastises right here. And you see, I'm such a liberated woman, Dr. Gale, I have to tell you that I burned my brassiere before I could ever wear one.
So you didn't actually have to have implants. They grew after taking
That's the most amazing thing. I did some medical research on this by going to the Johns Hopkins Medical Library that I was not supposed to be admitted to because it's only for medical students. But I snuck in just the same. And I read all these books about sexuality and how the hormones affect people in their different ways. My doctorate informed me that the only difference between men and women, other than these few minor parts, was mostly the hormones in which is flowing through your body.
So what has been the weirdest thing for you after, you know, transitioning from a male to a female? Socially, physically, physiologically, mentally, like what has been the weirdest thing for you?
I discovered PMS is real.
So you have PMS?
Well, my the first week of my my estrogen, the pharmacist had made a most terrible error.
And what was that?
I was taking 10 times the dosage that I had been prescribed.
Okay.
And I was finding myself just driving along, listening to a commercial on the radio, and I would start laughing and crying at the same time and not know why.
Right.
I did experience a little water retention that I didn't quite understand, but I thought, oh, well, that was, you know, something that went along with estrogen, just like other women get. Of course, you don't get any cramps because I have no womb or you know, uterus or ovaries or cervix or anything like that. So that wasn't anything that affected me directly. But when you get 10 times the dosage of estrogen, Oh, my goodness, Dr. Gale, what you women have to go through every month. Now
I know.
What about what we have to go through just being around you all?
Now, I did something.
It's not the same.
And I did something that was quite unusual compared to all my other transsexual friends.
And what's
that? And they wondered why the heck I would do this to me and myself. Even the doctors asked me why I did it to myself. Your natural cycle is approximately 28 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then for that week, your hormonal changes, make it life a little more difficult for a lot of women for that particular week before things start to go back to normal
mm-hmm.
levels of your normal hormones again.
Whatever that is.
Whatever that is. So when I was taking my estrogen, I actually cycled myself 28 days on and like about a week off. And everybody kept on asking me, why would you want to do that to yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you're asking me, who wants to live my life as a woman, why I shouldn't experience the other things that women also have problems with every month of their life and their existence for most of their adult life.
Yes. And it gets worse the older you get.
Oh, no. Maybe I better stop. Stopping is good, you know. No, I did that. And I did it also for other, my own scientific medical reasons to grow my own boobies. And that is, I kind of realized that a woman's breasts during her cycle begin to sort of enlarge at one point in her hormonal levels, and then as she progresses, the hormonal levels changes, then the breast relaxes somewhat and goes back to a smaller size again. And just like a balloon, as this goes on through a period of years, the balloon gets slightly stretched out of shape, and they get longer larger over a period of time. And most transsexuals, like myself, are extremely impatient. They start taking their estrogens, and they expect us to pop a set of double Ds next week.
So how long does it take?
Just like any woman mm-hmm. that goes through puberty, it is a growing cycle that takes actually a couple of years of taking these hormones until you've reached your fullest potential.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also determined by your genetic background. If all of the women in your family were busty women, there's a good chance that you too will be a busty woman.
Oh,
if
really?
Everybody was flat-chested on the female side of your family, you too will be an ironing board no matter how much estrogen you take. And a lot of those people, and just many of the transsexuals, before their breasts have a chance to grow over a period of years, sometimes make the mistake and go have cosmetic surgery to have breast implants done. And the problem with that is they find after the implantations of these artificial breasts, that a few years later they have gotten, a little too large and is a little uncomfortable, and all those straps are cutting into their shoulders.
Right.
And they've actually told me to my face that, geez, they didn't think they were going to grow this much. And I'm like, duh. People, you know, everybody wants drive-through today. Nobody's willing to work towards anything or wait for anything. It should all be instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And being a hard-nosed engineer, I just realize everything has to take its course.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy with my boobies. I mean, you know, I sprouted a nice pair of, 42 Bs, or they're almost Cs now. Maybe by the time I'm 65, there'll be D's hanging down to my belly button.
Nobody seemed to like my question a few minutes ago
Uh-oh.
About how much the surgery was.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. You're right. I didn't answer that question. At the time...
We didn't like your question.
Oh, I loved his question because I am Jewish, and I like to share things that are on sale with everybody when you're Jewish. I had actually interviewed and knew of all of the American surgeons, some of which I had met directly and spoken to. I knew of this surgeon up in Montreal that had been doing it for actually longer than virtually any doctor here in the United States had
longer
been doing
than it. Johns Hopkins.
Longer than Johns Hopkins, or at least as long as Johns Hopkins, and longer than any of the other popular cosmetic surgeons that were doing these transsexual sexual reassignment surgeries.
What do you mean been doing it longer? I mean, you got a longer so-and-so if you went to this?
The doctor that I went to already had about 30 years experience doing this to hundreds of maybe not thousands of patients before myself, where there are other doctors fresh out of medical school that realize the income potential and the...
Even my humor didn't work today.
Uh-oh, I'm sorry. No, I mean...
Sorry, Frank. Oh, that was so funny.
You know, what can I say?
So I went up to Montreal because at the time in 2001, the United States dollar was also at that time worth twice the Canadian dollar. And in the United States here, at that time, this kind of sex change surgery for a man into a woman was averaging about $15,000 at the time in 2001. And because of our currency differentials in Canada, I decided to go there where my sex change surgery only cost me $8,500.
And so you stated before that your insurance didn't cover that.
No,
right?
Nothing. Okay, nothing so of that. You asked me about the DSM-3, which is also another very relevant question. Many of the transsexuals that I know, once they go to a doctor for this and decide to make this transition in their lives, for some reason they either want the DSM-3 diagnosis, or they take offense and don't want the DSM-3 diagnosis.
Our audience doesn't know what the DSM is.
That's our diagnostic manual for psychology and psychiatry
and medicine.
Right. So now it's up to the DSM-4. The mm-hmm. 5 is DSM-4-TR, but the diagnoses have changed from the DSM-3 to the DSM-4-TR. Okay.
Because people like myself don't want to be considered mentally ill. This is, I believe, being recategorized as like a birth defect.
Exactly.
Or
so meaning given a mental health diagnosis, you know what I mean, for feeling that you were born the wrong person.
And but does it, medicine included also, general medicine?
No, this is just psychiatry and psychology.
But you see, it really matters when it comes down to like insurance policies.
Right.
Most definitely. And I gave my shrink a directive that I did not want a diagnosis of transsexualism. Mm-hmm. I told him my diagnosis will be severe and chronic depression, which is also what you would have when you felt like this, and that's what I had.
Mm-hmm.
Now, given a diagnosis such as that, it opened my abilities up to be treated for my medical depression, and if estrogen improved my depression, then that's what was described.
Prescribed.
Well, I am kind of a crafty, you know how devious women can be when they want to get what they want, so I guess I'm one of those women.
If there's one thing that comes to mind that you would like the general public to know about the transsexual community,
give us a takeaway.
Oh, wow. That's got to be one of the toughest questions I've been asked. The takeaway for me, I think, would be to make the transgender community realize that you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. I am one of those very masculine, man-sized people, and it doesn't matter what kind of facial cosmetic surgery I might have, of which I've had none, or anything else, I'm always going to stick out in the crowd. My facial features are rather masculine, and so I'm not out to fool everybody. Most transsexuals want to remain anonymical, as opposed to what people might perceive them to be. And
so it sounds like what you're saying is you have to kind of get through that, which I understand why you have to have those two letters of reference from your psychologist or psychiatrist. So it sounds like you do have to be okay inside, so to speak, you know, and okay with who you are inside prior to
absolutely
having an outside change.
And they try to, you know, they do the best they can to weed out the crazies. But I fooled the doctors. No, I didn't fool the doctors. They fooled me. Yeah, you know, you've got to, you just have to accept these things in your life, that your life is not going to be a normal one after this kind of a change unless you're very, very lucky. And there are those folks that have been very, very lucky, and they have done very, very well. Equally so, there's been just as many, if not more, failures and suicides.
After the change.
You know.
Any advice for anyone contemplating a similar surgery?
Absolutely. Before you want to contemplate a surgery such as this, you want to know what the risks are in this particular kind of surgery. It is very life-altering, and if you happen to have an active sexual existence with multiple partners over your lifetime, the doctors did indicate to me that once you go through this surgery, there is about an 80% chance you'll never experience a physical climax ever again.
Wow.
Now,
did you?
80%. Well, they were absolutely right.
Wow.
What a bummer. No more fabulous release.
Well, now you can be like some
orgasmic
women and just fake it.
Well, guess what? Guess what? You know, about a year and a half after the surgery, and with the surgery, there's a certain amount of upkeep and maintenance that you must follow.
I was wondering about that.
And it's rather rigorous, and it's rather daily, and it's rather boring, and it gets a little sloppy.
Well, let's hear it, because
we
no matter how boring it is, I've never heard of it and have no idea what it is.
Essentially, once you've had the surgery, your body wants to heal that which is not natural to it.
It wants to close up. Right,
and it wants to close that new opening that you've just spent, you know, $8,000 to $15,000 or $20,000 on. Yeah, today it's over $20,000.
Don't you have to stick something in it?
Yeah, I asked Frank earlier today, but you know, he just he wasn't gonna go for it. So, yeah, you get this series.
You always have that fancy truck outside.
Yes, I do. That was one of the reasons why I've got trucks. I've got RVs and a Chevy van. So, you know, I'm in the lap of
a mobile one.
I feel like I'm sitting here with train tracks and a train with a small light like riding right towards me.
I'm in the lap of luxury of self-abuse. And you have to go through it and use these graduated sized, phallic sized devices and graduated sizes from like small to smaller large to medium large to large to ouch! and I didn't like that one too terribly much. And so I'm not going to go looking for John Holmes. Well, also because he's dead from AIDS. And I think I was lucky that I wasn't gay, because if I was living a gay lifestyle that like a lot of my late friends did, I'd be dancing with them and everybody else upstairs in the great beyond. So.
And so you still, after all these 10 years, you still have to do the daily maintenance?
You don't have to do it daily. After a number of years of doing it, you can gradually taper down.
And is there a maintenance as well for the, from what, female to male? Like, did your partner have to have daily maintenance as well?
Yeah, he wanted to lay me all too much. That testosterone just, you know, when it kicks in, it just does not stop. The surgery for the women that want to become men is, of course, radically different from that of the men that want to become women, because to make a guy into a girl, it's actually just a minor medical modification, but to turn a woman into a man requires some construction work.
Right.
And there is always the possibility of this new device that they have manufactured for you becoming necrotic, turning black and falling off.
Oh my goodness.
From you know, gangrene, from poor circulation, because this is, and it's also, I find it rather fascinating. It's still, in a way, and I hate to put it this manner, because it is rather disgusting to think about. There is still a lot of bigotry and discrimination towards women. The sex change surgery for a man to become a woman hovers today between the $10,000 and $20,000 mark, depending on where you go in the world to have it. But for a woman to be turned into a man, and the subsequent surgery to create a working phallus, they're going to spend well over $50,000.
Wow.
And so because of that extreme...
I'll keep it. I'm good.
I was going to say, because of that extreme expenditure differential, a lot of these women that have become men have opted for different types of techniques. Some
what
of
techniques are there?
Actually, for women that become men, there's a number of interesting genital modifications that they can make, along with the fact that when you take testosterone as a woman, the clitoris
becomes enlarged.
It becomes enlarged, and my boyfriend and I used to have a sort of a funny code between the two of us, because we'd be out and about, and he liked girls for sure, and I'd spot a pretty one, and I'd nudge him and point towards the pretty girl, and he would look at me and smile, and I would look at him and give him a thumbs up. Now, that's how big it gets if
right,
you're a woman.
Right, when you take testosterone.
Yeah.
So did he actually have the surgery, or did he just take the testosterone?
He just took the testosterone.
Oh,
now,
okay.
The other thing that happens to women, unlike the men that become women, men will grow breasts, because every man has as much breast tissue as that of women.
Now, my friend that had the surgery, he actually had the surgery. Like, so he actually has a penis.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And sometimes that surgery is extremely successful.
He said it works.
And there's a number of different ways done. A number of them have discovered post-surgery that they actually have also lost their ability to climax, or to at least enjoy the stimulation of what is left of the clitoris, and some have expressed the fact that they really can't climax anymore, but they enjoy their role as a male in this world, pleasing their female partners. And some of them actually become gay guys, and they still end up with men.
Did you and your partner enjoy your sex life together?
Absolutely, and before my surgery, when we did make love, I was rather remarkable, because I was contrary to what the medical community told me what would happen. As a man, when you start taking estrogen, generally your testosterone production will go down, and or your sex drive will go down, and your ability to attain an erection and or perform sexually in any kind of a way with your penis generally won't happen anymore after a couple of weeks of taking estrogen. And after about 10 years of taking estrogen, or was that 14 years of taking estrogen, it worked sort of like Viagra on me, and it did just the opposite, which I found rather amusing. So when we would make love, we would make love with my equipment, which would work very well. And he would kind of ride that in a slightly different way than vaginal intercourse. And we both lived vicariously through it. So I felt rather bad, and I did apologize to him after my surgery that I have taken a certain dynamic out of our relationship together that we both kind of lived through together. But we both at that point had made this complete change anyhow. And so that was never a problem with our relationship in that respect.
Very interesting. Thanks for sharing.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with a musical producer and video engineer who also happens to be a transsexual. Along today's journey, we've discussed Remy's surgery, the adjustments that have been necessary, and the advice that she has for anyone contemplating a similar surgery. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had talking with Remy about her surgery and her life.
You can put your pants back on now, Frank.
As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that will help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook/RelationshipFLove. On Twitter at Mr. That's Mr. Frank Love, or at franklove.com. Until next time, keep rising. This is Frank Love.
I can't do that anymore.